The eastern world is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button's pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation. Marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, the whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look at Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. You don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. I am Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it's listener-supported radio, so show them some support. Head on over there to freedomslips.com, find that donation button, and use it. And I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Philip Ferrugio.
How you doing? Okay, we're all very right. Lucky tonight. We have a guest. We have Glenn Ford. Now, Glenn is with the Black Agenda Report. He worked as a news person at four local stations in Columbus, Georgia, Atlanta, and Baltimore, where he created his first radio syndication, a half-hour weekly news magazine called Black World Report. In 1974, Glenn joined the Mutual Black Network, where he served as Capitol Hill State Department and White House correspondent and Washington Bureau chief, while also producing a daily radio commentary. In 1977, he co-launched, produced, and hosted America's Black Forum, the first nationally syndicated black news interview program on commercial television. Glenn Ford co-founded Black Commentator in 2002. The Weekly Journal quickly became the most influential black political site on the net. In October of 2006, Glenn Ford and the entire writing team left BC to launch Black Agenda Report, which he's still doing. He's a founding member of the Washington chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists, executive board member of the National Alliance of Third World Journalists, media specialist for the National Minority Purchasing Council, and he has spoken at scores of colleges and universities. Do we have Glenn on the air here?
Almost. Hang on 1 second. I just found the number right now. It didn't pop up the way it was supposed to, but I've got it now. So here we go.
Yeah, we might want to have him stay over after the break if you have time. Okay, anyway, we'll see.
All right, here we go. Boom, boom. Okay, it's dialing now.
Okay, Glenn has written a really good piece, which I'm going to go over with him.
Hello, Glenn. This is Chuck
Hi.
Gregory and Philip Ferrugio, and we are live on the new American Dream Radio Show, and I'm going to let Phil talk with you. Thank you very much for being on our show.
Thanks for
inviting
Glenn,
me. Let's get right to it. Okay, let's get right to it. I already introduced you. You wrote a piece called The Ruling Class Will Not Tolerate the Sanders-Led Assault on Austerity. Let's talk about that. Tell us what you meant by that.
Well, the Sanders part is not the most important part. It's the austerity part. We have to understand that it's austerity has been the policy of the corporate and financial ruling class worldwide for the last 4 decades. Sanders and his policies, his proposals for Medicare for all, for free public higher education, and the rest, and of course the demands for a higher minimum wage, all of these are assaults on austerity, that is, assaults on the policy of the ruling class. So this is only dramatic because finally we have, rising out of the Democratic Party with the full resistance of that party, a candidate that taps into the masses of the people's demands. These are supermajority demands, and actually present a real threat to the austerity policies of the global capitalist ruling class. The Democratic Party, like the Republican Party, is a corporate party. It's there to defend corporate interests. And in many ways, it's the more important of the two corporate parties, especially since that unpredictable element, Donald Trump, took over the machinery of the Republican Party. Now all the hopes and dreams of the corporate class are vested in the Democratic Party, which is the party whose job it is to sit on the most volatile elements of society, the most anti-corporate elements of society, including Black America, the most left-wing constituency in society. So the Democrats have a much harder task in terms of being part of the corporate duopoly. In the Republican Party, which has since Nixon's time been the white man's party, there's always been a white man's party in this country. The Democrats held that position for the longest time. The Republicans then switched under the Nixon regime. But if you are the white man's party, your constituents make no demands other than the maintenance of white supremacy. So whatever they get out of that, they're satisfied with that. The demands come from the Democratic constituency. So that's the problem for the ruling class. They have control of both electoral parties in the United States.
Right.
The problem child is the Democrats, because that's the party that sits on the whole range of political opinion that is to the left of Attila the Hun.
Now, Glenn, let me just ask you something. If you watched the part one of the first round of debates last night, which I'm going to ask you to comment on, but the interesting thing, Glenn, is the only person up there, which was Tulsi Gabbard, the only person up there who actually spoke about foreign policy as far as getting our military out of these places where they're in now and the obscene spending. And yet the other ones didn't even go near it. Did you notice that, too?
Oh, yeah, and that was to be expected. She is the only one who speaks directly to foreign, not just directly to foreign policy, because the others make comments on foreign policy, usually having something to do with Russia and Russiagate. But Tulsi Gabbard is the most openly, well, she passes for the anti-imperialist in the ranks.
Right, right. Now, is it a coincidence, Glenn, in your eyes, that all of a sudden, from 2016 to now, they came up with over 25 people to run for president? Do you think that had something to do with maybe trying to marginalize, you know, Sanders out?
Of course. You know, you have to understand, Sanders came into this with what he didn't have when he began in 2016, which is almost universal name recognition among the electorate. And he had not just his own operation, but he had spun off semi-independent operations that grew out of what really did look like something like a movement generated by the Sanders campaign. And against him, who did they have? They had no great corporate knight. And so this was very, very worrisome to the Democrats. And so they decided to do something similar to what the Republicans did when Trump was making his move. And so we all were laughing back in 2016 when this menagerie of 16 Republican candidates, all of them trotting out with the enthusiastic encouragement of all of the establishment Republicans, stop Trump. All of them tried to stop Trump, and Trump, with the help of $5 billion in free media, Trump knocked them all down. The Democrats are responding to Bernie Sanders this time very much like the Republicans responded to Donald Trump. What their great fear, the Democrats' great fear, was that Sanders might arrive at the convention with a majority and win on the first ballot. The superdelegates kick in if there is no majority on the first ballot. So they get to vote on the second ballot. But Sanders, they thought, stood a chance of coming in with a majority. So their strategy was to give permission and encouragement, kind of like what the Republicans did in 2016, to all the up-and-comers, all the different voices, every flavor, every color, every sex and sexual tendency, in order to split up the vote so that the chances of anybody coming to the convention with a majority were lessened. Although Elizabeth Warren, and this shows the depth of the corporate fear in the Democratic Party, Elizabeth Warren was considered anathema, but they've decided that she being a regulator and he being a flamethrower, she is more palatable, or they're going to market her as more palatable than Bernie. And the worst that can happen if they boost Warren is that the Sanders leftish vote will be split. And that seems to be happening.
Yeah. Also, she really showed her true colors. Not people in the mainstream wouldn't even see this, but maybe I'm going to ask you. She showed her true colors to me. Well, I don't like them anyway, the whole idea of the two parties. But when she came out and she said, I have a plan, she said, I have a plan. I want to tax anyone making over $70 million a year, a 2% tax. And it's like I wanted to throw my shoe at the television set. I yelled out, so what? What's that? Is that a radical thing? So tell us what you think about that, Glenn.
Well, we have to understand what austerity is and why it is the policy of the ruling class. Austerity deliberately tries to create the conditions in which workers are insecure and will take any kind of job under any terms of employment and just about any wage. Austerity is a global policy of the ruling class because they have set in motion, quite deliberately, a global race to the bottom so that wages in the what I call the imperial center countries, the United States and Europe, are constantly eroded. And at the same time, you chip away every chance you can at the social safety net so that workers don't have that kind of protection. And then as wages and living standards fall, they become more and more insecure and more easily hired to worse and worse jobs. Until today, we have people going to work at things that are called jobs that we wouldn't recognize as jobs at all when we were young people. Places of so-called employment where you get no benefits and you can be fired at will and you're not even called a worker. Some folks who are very close to me go to work in office buildings and sit next to other people who are called associates, but they are called contractors, and they're doing the same damn work, but there is no obligation for the employer to that person. Well, that's the kind of labor relations that the ruling class wants to establish. But you've got to knock down this social safety net. You've got to get rid of any protections that workers feel they have so that they won't demand anything from employers. And that includes not giving them in the United States what virtually every other rich country has, which is single-payer health care. So right. In the United States, you are afraid to leave your job no matter how badly you're treated and no matter how often your pay actually decreases because you fear that you'll lose your health coverage and your children's health coverage. That's the kind of straitjacket that the capitalists want everybody in the world to begin, to be begging them for any kind of employment. That's what austerity is about. The other part of austerity is privatization, so that all of human relations can somehow be commodified and the folks at the top suck up more and more of the wealth, and there's nothing in between in terms of state intervention.
Well, it's interesting because I'm on Medicare, and what I realize is that Medicare has already been prostituted because the private insurance companies practically call the shots. You know, I mean, when I go to a doctor's office, they don't even ask me for my Medicare card; they ask me for my insurance card. So, you know, and I've had two surgeries already turned down by a Humana because they didn't think it was a worthwhile surgery that my doctor wanted to perform, procedure. So that's the problem. And this whole thing, I think, with the Medicare for All that the Democrats now are all running around talking about, the majority of them are still talking about Medicare for All with the private insurance companies involved. So, do you see that also, Glenn, as a problem?
Of course. And that's one of the reasons, that is one of many reasons, that Bernie Sanders is verboten, treated like a foreign body in the Democratic Party. But they have to be careful how they do that because his issues, like Medicare for All, improved Medicare for All, are supermajority issues. That's why this is a crisis for the corporate Democratic Party, because all of these issues, Green New Deal, free public higher education, higher minimum wage, all of these things are supermajority issues with the support of something like 90% of the Democratic base and about half of Republicans. If there's any chance of peeling away the hard core of Trump supporters who are there and supporting him because of race, if there's any way to do that, it is by offering them something for their pocket. something to save their ailing mother. That's all that will break a white supremacist who is with the Republicans today because of their white supremacy away from Trump. And but that's what's offered by Bernie Sanders. It's not what Joe Biden will be putting out there.
Well,
Glenn and Phil, we are almost at the end of this first segment of the show, and so we're going to have to wrap this up. Glenn, can you please share with our listeners where they might find you on the internet?
Well, that's the easiest wrap-up conceivable. BlackAgendaReport.com, and we have a new issue every Wednesday.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
And he has some great writers. He has some great writers with him, Bruce Dixon, Margaret Kimberly, Danny Haifong, and, of course, Glenn himself. They are the real true progressives and anti-imperialists on the web. So thank you, Glenn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn, for being on the show. And thanks, Phil, for being my co-host. And, hey, we will talk to you listeners on the other side of the station break. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank runs the Des Moines Catholic Worker, and we are very fortunate to have Frank as a weekly guest on our show. And so I got hold of him earlier and recorded the conversation, and here it is.
Now, hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm sweltering in Iowa.
Oh yeah.
I just posted a couple of links stories about the heat waves that are in India and Europe. I mean, they're just frying over there. So I got little to complain about. Still, you know, we're back in a really really very hot and muggy. And it's 90s, but humid, and the rain on and off that makes it, you know, just feel steamy. I'm talking to a guy. Where are you at? Florida? Maybe?
Yeah. I'm in Fort Lauderdale. And today, it only got up to 90 today. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, you guys are used to it. No sweat, although for us, we're used to it too, but it's seasonal. And in Iowa, it takes its toll because we do winters just as extreme as the summers. But that's the old weather. Who knows what's coming? You guys, it may not be the rain. You may need to move because the water is going to take over your land.
Yeah.
It's really some... you know, we have biblical proportion issues that we're going to be dealing with in the next couple generations, without a doubt.
It sure looks that way, yeah.
Yes, which is the, you know, we have to, you know, I'm having a hard time being bleak about our survival rate as a species, chances. And on the other hand, you know, that's just, that's demobilizing. I think the real issue is what kind of human beings do we want to be on the other side of these cataclysmic things that are going to change the very nature about how we operate, and how are we going to do it humanely and with a painful sense that the way we got ourselves in this predicament was anything but humanely. However, those who are the liars convince the majority that the way they're doing it is the only way it can be done. For me, as a follower of the radical Jesus, first century Jew on a tree hung by the Romans, that's really an important question because my whole sense of being an American and my modern sense of science, everything tells me, like the kids, everybody senses it. We all sense it. This planet's in real big poo-poo, and everybody's scared and want to know what to do about it. Everyone feels paralyzed by it. You're either paralyzed by it, or you're like it's a sword, and the sword has an edge, and the edge is going through the bodies, because there are people suffering right now. Right now, people are living lives that are apocryphal, that are changing, that are earth changing, changing their lives. It's just there are more people afoot, trying to get away from politics and violence and economic poverty. I mean, and this is only going to get more and more intense because people will have to move because the weather is changing what's livable and what's not. What are we going to do? How are we going to address that? See, we're not, we don't, and if the current political scene is any indication, oh, God help us. We are such ugly people. And that has to be, you know, I just think that, I want to turn the corner on being more hopeful about what we can do in the midst of all these extraordinary lies. We had an interesting discussion this morning, Jacob, me, and Rena. We're going to go to this conference that's going to be at Princeton University in New Jersey somewhere. This peace group that works with church groups, organizing parishes, to work on the drone warfare issue. And 1 or 2 years ago, they had Bishop Pates there, and they love Bishop Pates. Well, we don't. And we asked, they're going to let us put on a panel about what we've been doing the last 2.5 years. And they're very worried that we've been in these phone conversations about being negative, you know. I'm listening to these guys. God love them. But textbook liberal perspective. Academics are people who buy into that stuff that know that the universities have been doing the best they can. They haven't. The universities are as much sellouts as our bishops. Is anybody listening? And they're not. And then they don't want to have, they're concerned about being negative. They'll be negative because you can't move people if you're negative. And all I said to him is like, listen, brothers, we all been trying to do this for 40 years. Nobody's been moving anybody. You can't blame this on me. You can't blame this. You who'd speak positive, what's that done us? Nothing. And in fact, the language of positive human reinforcement, blah, 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 which was cutting edge in the 70s, is co-opted and owned by the one percenters. The corporates use that shit. So it's like we need a different language to break through the lie of this country. And it ain't going to be from the academic scene. So that's an interesting discussion. We all found a common ground about civil disobedience. That both of them said we have a conference that's American, and doing civil disobedience should be part of any movement that want to do social change. They're committed to that. They're just kind of sensitive, like, you know, it's interfaith. They said it's an interfaith thing. So there'll be Jews here. And there'll be sheiks here, and there'll be Muslims here. So you just can't be Christian-centered. And then I said to him, listen, I says, what I'm going to say is that I'm here as an American like all the rest of you. And we live in a predominantly Christian country here as Americans. I mean, all of us aren't, but the majority of people in this country are Christians. And in Iowa, those Christians who go to church, Republicans, have more faith in the U.S. military than they do their churches. That's fascism. So we need to confront that as Christians. And then I never got to tell them what I think if I were about the Jewish people. You know, well, what about the Jews? I was like, all right, this is what I would say to a Jew who comes to this thing. You are a U.S. Jewish person. You're just as crazy as these Christians are. And what are you doing to reclaim your faith? Huh? Why not? And the sheikh, I said, anybody who has a disproportion or a proportion of property and wealth, and that once you have that property wealth dictates that you play the rules of the empire. It just does. Now, you know, and it's all has to do with scale. I mean, the people I live with in this neighborhood who own these homes, they're not the problem. Not that kind of ownership. It's goddamn thing the billionaires own. That's the problem. Yeah. We don't dismantle that, then who the hell, what are we talking about? especially when foster nationalism. I mean, is this the choice we have, nationalism or a globalism, pyramid style, bank scheme, and they own the bank? I mean, that's stupid. Well, don't get me going there, kid.
But, hey, thank you very much, Frank. Don't melt God, out there.
God bless you. Enjoy it.
Bless you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Andy Rooney reporting for the New American Dream Radio Show. Do you ever wonder? Well, the kind of people we have running our government, if we really knew the truth, I believe we would be astonished. Forget about George Washington and the cherry tree, Ronald Reagan making America strong again, the George Bushes riding into the baseball game on national TV to throw out the first ball and then sitting in the front row. Forget about Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, the new liberal Democrats who care about you. Forget about Donald Trump. SpongeBob, The Simpsons, and South Park, Calvin and Hobbes, and Snoopy have more to tell us than these guys. In the Soviet Union, when they saw nonsense and lies printed in Pravda and TASS, at least they knew they were lies. We're still at the infancy stage in our development, not questioning the lies. So the next time there's a bombing or a threat of a bombing or a bunch of blue backpacks found in Bemidji, the healthy American, the true American, the real American thinks CIA, FBI, police. The real patriot refuses to stand for the national anthem, and rather than another knee-jerk reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance, he says, not till I get some questions answered. This is important stuff. This has been Andy Rooney reporting for the New Nightly News. Don't you ever wonder. Dear Western peoples, if you wish to be able to walk down the street without being accosted by the police, demanded to present identity papers, and searched and detained indefinitely or assassinated without due process of law, if you wish to be able to express your opinion about your government and its use of your tax payments, if you wish to be able to discuss current affairs or your personal affairs without being recorded by the NSA or the equivalent in your own country or by both. If you wish to live in the freedom that was achieved in the West after centuries of struggle, wake up. Wake up. Find time from less meaningful pursuits to become aware of what is being stolen from you. It is late in the game. If you do not stand up for truth, you will have no freedom, as there is no freedom without truth. The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored by homemade apple pie in the bright red can. And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees, can't see a thing. He's on Twitter on his phone chatting with the Kremlin. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He says he believes he needs to stay in constant contact. At 10 a.m. every day, Buddy goes to Waffle House, has his large scattered hash browns covered in melted cheese with sausage and two eggs, 930 calories with two coffees. He waits, looking out the window by himself, and then when the time is right, he goes and plugs the men's toilet. Of course he does. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for In next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsored as of on Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Piroshki cart. When your dogs tell you the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, well, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box. The mind of an American rules the world. The president, Warren Buffett, Tiger Woods, Katie Couric, John Stewart, the Michelin Man? No, stupid. It's you. You're the king of the world. God, Superman, King Midas, all that. It's you. You're more than just a legend in your own mind. You are the man. And when the CIA, through the CIA propaganda machine called Radio Free Europe or the American Free Press, when they tell you the Russians are coming or the criminals are coming or terrorists or Iranians, Iraqis, Afghans on nuclear-powered blue donkeys or big bees, well, when you believe it, well then, Zeke, that's how the world will go. You are powerful, the most powerful Yahoo who has ever lived in the history of living, and you are an idiot. The world is going to burn. You're not an idiot on purpose, but an idiot nonetheless. The CIA, the persons in the CIA are smart, but they are evil. The actual evil empire, and they control you. The most powerful person in the world, if you were not an idiot, they could not do that. But you are an idiot. And that's a bummer, man. That's a bummer. We've received word that Mark, the most dangerous blogger on the planet and soon to be graduate of Moonrock Lake High School, is about to release his latest column on his website. Moondust and Cheetos Dust are both orange. And now from his parents' basement, Mark, the most dangerous blogger on Earth and beyond. While demanding open borders may seem like a marginal position in U.S. politics now, keep in mind that Build the Wall was on the fringe until recently. Right wing has been audacious in upsetting mainstream sensibilities regarding the treatment of asylum seekers, calling for and enacting through the White House the separation of migrant families and mass detention of migrants, all in highly public ways. We should match and go beyond their boldness in defending the right to migrate as fundamental to humanity. We should be calling for open borders without apology. A genuine call for open borders is virtually absent from the debate between the White House and Capitol Hill, where the question has not been whether to militarize the border, but merely how many billions of dollars should be devoted to border security. But open borders, it's more than an epithet for the right to attack its opponents with. It's a legitimate position. The left should take it up as the only humane one. It's bitterly ironic that Trump constantly describes migrants in the Central American exodus as an invasion when the United States has carried out so many actual invasions of that region. Operations which bear great responsibility for destabilizing those societies and pushing so many people to come north in the first place. For decades, critics of globalization have pointed out that the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, World Trade Organization, institutions that are shaped and dominated by the United States, have helped create a world where capital moves freely while human beings are stuck at borders. Numerous free trade agreements have accelerated this trend. As asylum seekers at the border confront metal barriers, surveillance drones, and armed guards barring their entry. Trucks, trains, and boats bring a high volume of shipping containers into the United States each day. Ports of entry have perfected clearing these goods through customs efficiently, and policymakers have regulated and deregulated international commerce to make the process as easy as possible. If only the people migrating from Central America and elsewhere were commodities instead of human beings, they would enter the United States painlessly, be handled with care by workers who are experts at transferring goods quickly and carefully, and then transported overnight to all corners of the country through extensive commercial distribution networks. Commercial goods aren't the only things that move freely across borders. The U.S. military carries out operations all over the world with such regularity it's not even considered newsworthy in the United States. We're living in a time not only of darkness and repression, but also political possibility. Medicare for All, previously a marginalized demand in the United States, though existing in practice throughout much of the world, is now a central demand of mainstream liberal politics. The slogan "Abolish ICE," first raised by grassroots migrant justice activists, lifted up by the Democratic Socialists of America, it's been brought into official U.S. politics, even carried onto Capitol Hill by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The slogan has become so potent that the president and vice president have had to go out of their way to denounce it. Trump did it for one time in the State of the Union. Well, systems and governments that invest tremendously in perfecting the movement of commerce and violence across borders while investing at similar scale to stop the movement of people, they aren't being simply hypocritical. They are also violating a fundamental human right. People have the right to move freely. Human migration, and migration particular to the Americas, predates the United States or its borders. Indeed, many of the people coming north from Central America are indigenous, belonging to groups of people whose histories stretch far before that of the U.S. nation state. The right to freedom of movement becomes only more important as growing numbers of people become uprooted and displaced. Conflict over control of the planet's resources, economic policies that devastate people the world over, and climate change, which creates more disasters and makes parts of the world uninhabitable for everyday life, are all increasing. With those dynamics, the responsibility of governments to honor people's freedom to move only grows too, as does that of ordinary people to defend that right. Meanwhile, the majority of people in the United States oppose Trump's wall, and 3/4 of Americans recently told pollsters they think immigration is a good thing. These facts, evidence of a complicated political terrain, but one that has much promise for progressives and the left, show why supporting border security rather than centering the rights of migrants in the conversation about migration is not only wrong, it's also out of step with the progressive trend in U.S. politics. Coming up on our next segment of the New American Dream Radio Show, we will feature Michael Annis and Julius Awafong. They're from Denver and from Cameroon, respectively. Thank you for joining us tonight on the New American Dream Radio Show. I hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's a listener-supported network, and they deserve your support.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Wexel Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the evening is Michael Annis, who will be joining us from Denver. Michael is the founder and editor for Howling Dog Press. Michael is an excellent poet, and we're very fortunate to have him as part of our show each month. And I'm about to call him now. I think I used the wrong contact. Hang on one second. So we're going to try this again.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. It's Chuck Gregory, the new American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Well, hi, Chuck. It's good to be back on the new American Dream. First, I'd like a shout-out to Mike Palachek. I'll miss him. I'm always impressed with his personal
writing. Yeah, I miss him, too.
Yeah, I consider him to be very courageous in what he does and how he expresses things. So tonight I will be reading part two of Timothy Leary's Criminalizing the Natural, Naturalizing the Criminal. Leary submitted the essay to me for potential inclusion in my Stiletto Anthology series in 1992. I published the entire essay in that series, in the second part of Stiletto to the Disinherited. And Leary himself is often remembered for his statement, "Turn on, tune in, and drop out," which became an anthem of the late 60s anti-war countercultural movement. He was quite influential back then. People listened up to what he had to say, and he was always expressing alternative viewpoints to the status quo. In fact, so much that President Richard Nixon at the time once described Leary as the most dangerous man in America. So, part two, Criminalizing the Natural, Naturalizing the Criminal by Timothy Leary. God and man become machine-tooled in the cold temperate zone. These aforementioned feudal empires, which emerged along the Mediterranean basin, were based on hand tools used to tame horses, channel water, harness wind power. People were held together by an intricate web of laws, rules, taboos, and ethical prescriptions. The next stage in human evolution was the industrial. Humans learned how to make tool-making machines. The German Johann Gutenberg started it all with his diabolical printing press, which made possible the mass production of books, which made possible mass literacy, mass education, and factory technology. Get out your map of Europe and run your finger along the next step in evolution, the 45th to 60th latitudes. Notice how the great cities where the industrial age emerged lie in this narrow strip. Milan, France, the Ruhr, Germany, England, Scotland, Scandinavia, USSR. Dig the sudden brand switch in the God department. The great feudal religions had been Catholic and Islamic. The great religions of the industrial civilizations are Protestant and Communist. extremely white men worship an engineer god whose ethical commandment is put on your uniform and work. The virtuous citizen, like a good machine, is now defined as dependable, prompt, reliable, efficient, productive. There are many reasons, climatic, geopsychological, logistic, why industrial civilizations emerged in the cold environment. It's all about heat. A continual indoor heat supply was needed to warm houses in the frigid north. And heat requires the manufacture and storage and transmission of Newtonian energies. So it was heat that turned the wheels of the factories. Steam power, coal power, oil. Mastery of mechanical power produced the industrial empires of the 18th to the 20th centuries. The factory-made steam vessels and railroads and weapon machines made possible dreams of world conquest. The energy supplies required for the northern factories were to be found, guess where? In the two lower floors, the mid-temperate zone, now called by the northern theologians the third world, and of course the tropics, now called the fourth world. So colonies were established in the Middle East, India, Southeast Asia, Africa, which zones were efficiently looted for raw materials. Just as the Roman and Arabic and Spanish kingdoms of the mid-temperate sailed to the tropics to find black slaves and gold and ivory, so did white-skinned empires steam and jet south to build railroads, airstrips, tourist hotels, and to erect the steam-belching, smoky temples of the mechanical god, his factories. Again, the new northern culture is layered down over the old customs. These days, the typical tropical country, take Haiti or Kenya, for example, is stratified like this. A solid foundation of tribal culture, veneered over by a feudal, strongman military regime, which in turn is supported by American or European or Soviet mechanical might. This works well for a while. The North exports guns and machines. The guns are used to motivate the tropical folks to dig out of the ground the raw materials which are shipped north to pay for the guns. But on weekends and full moons and sacred occasions, guess what? The natives tend to revert to nature. They joyously perform the old rituals, strip off the veils, paint their bodies, drum, dance, chant, ingest plants that put them into altered states of consciousness, get possessed by God knows how many different natural forces, engage in sexual activities, and just generally party it up in the classic sense of this sacred word. It's the basic time-honored religious ceremony, you recall, a celebration, an innovation, and an invitation to the gods to inhabit, possess, take over the minds and bodies of their worshipers. Believe me, no one is on his knees during a pagan religious service, or if they are, it's not in suppliant begging prayer. Now, the white Protestants found this extremely shocking. The basic aim of northern religions, we recall, was to root out, exorcise, censor, subdue the evil which the Bibles say lurks in the hearts and loins of all men. Nature means sin. The northern priests denounced the native practices as pagan, heathen, devilish, and evil. God-fearing, decent white folks banded together in mechanical unanimity to condemn nudity, sex, intoxication, and possession. Efficient northern mechanical cultures also trickle down to the temperate zones. In East Asia, Sri Lanka, India, Pakistan, Middle East, North Africa, even in Greece and Turkey, the factory-made guns and communication devices permit the inhabitants to indulge in the all-time favorite sport of feudal lands, which is fanatic, genocidal religious crusades. So trouble, bad trouble, has been brewing down south for many centuries. Starvation, drought, poverty, overpopulation, racial and religious conflict, endemic war, increasing terrorism, and growing anger towards the northern ruler and cultures. But now, these scary attitudes no longer seem quarantined down there in the untidy southern latitudes. They are already bubbling up to confront the industrial nations of the North. The South invades the North with supernatural powers. The cultural and economic traffic between the tropic and temperate zones has always been a two-way street. The North exports artificials, tools, machines, guns, law books, political constitutions, cultural rules, religious taboos. The South exports its natural resources, raw materials, ores, precious gems, rare woods, herbs, spices, exotic foods, oil, of course, and most important, human bodies in the form of slaves and migrant workers. Now, guess what these poor, benighted heathens smuggled in with them in the slave ships and immigrant boats? Exactly those precious gifts which the northern cultures had censored and prohibited in their own hard-working, God-fearing, inhibited folks. Precisely that for which the mechanical robot people hungered for. The pagan culture, the pantheist ways, the worship of the natural, the wild celebration of life, the exultant embrace of the ancient biological powers, the spontaneous exuberance of the sensual, the street-smart wisdom of the outsiders who, for centuries, had been coolly observing and mocking the pious white folks marching around with their guns and crosses. This insidious cultural invasion surfaced in the roaring 20th century when intelligent northerners began to sense the heavy price they paid for mechanization. In the 1920s, the pagan revival came above ground in the form of jazz. Musicians no longer followed directors or conductors or printed scores. Improvisation, syncopation, innovation, the jazz musician gets possessed, trances out. In both the USA and the USSR, the acceptance of jazz becomes the first sign that the industrial ethos is loosening up. The definitive explosion of pagan cultural themes happened in the 1960s. The civil rights movement, black pride, the ghetto riots. More important was the music. Never has a cultural religious event changed the world as quickly and pervasively as rock and roll. Why? Because rock is a magical blend of African polytheistic rhythms and European pagan Celtic Druid lyrics, amplified and flung around the world at the speed of light by quantum electronic technology. And it is no accident that the religious message of rock and roll was a joyful rejection of the mechanization that feudal industrial cultures glorified. When Bob Dylan sang, "I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more," he expressed the spirit of everyone, colored, southern white, who rejected the alienation of the smokestack assembly line factory culture. The popularity of psychedelic drugs is another example of the revival of southern culture. Notice that the neurotransmitters made illegal in Reagan's land are southern vegetables. The poppy, ground-up coca leaves, the flowering tops of the marijuana plant. None of these botanical substances are as physically or psychologically dangerous as the factory-made northern mind-benders, distilled liquor, North Carolina-grown nicotine, and the prescription euphoriants and tranks used legally by middle-class housewives. The southern botanical, grass, opium, coca, are threatening to the order and conformity demanded by the factory culture. One, like the natives who use them, these vegetables grow wild. They are non-domesticated. Grown up in mountains, they are hard to control. They are sold on the black market, that naughty, unauthorized free exchange that operates outside the control of the white bankers and the feudal tax collectors. Inexpensive, wild southern herbs compete with the lucrative trade which our Puritan founders had going with slaves and rum. Two, native drug rituals are immoral, in other words, banned as sinful by the northern religions. Damn right they are. They incite personal freedom, pagan celebration, self-expression, disordered joy, sensual pleasure. They dramatically threaten the control of the priests. Remember those scandalous biblical stories about Moses and the other high-ranking priests coming down the mountain and finding the tribes stoned, whooping it up around the golden calf and other natural icons? Heresy, sin, devil worship. Number three, The ingestion of native plants is also criminal. Why? Because the white men who write the laws and run the police stations say so. And number four, the ingestion of natural plants is not only immoral, criminal, and bad for business, it is treasonous. It figures, doesn't it? You are a self-respecting native, and in come these weirdo white robots brandishing guns, despoiling your neighborhood, your culture, breaking up your family, scorning your gods. Now, the most effective nonviolent act of political resistance is to perform your native rituals, get high with a native plant. Neurotransmitters are the ultimate weapons of democracy. A few tokes on an opium pipe, and you and your friends have gently and delightfully floated outside the white man's economic, religious, legal, and political domination.
Michael, that was an amazing reading. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
I always look forward to this. This is this is my monthly like let it all hang out, let it all hang loose moment. So I do it. I'm glad to be on. Thanks for having me on.
All right. It was interesting that you just happened to cough when you were talking about certain subjects, but no comment. Hey, thank you, Ken.
Well, this
I really
is Colorado and everything's legal here.
So. Oh, that's right. All right. Hey, I'm going to come visit you in the fall.
Hope to see you, Chuck.
All right.
There's lots to go
Thanks
around.
Again. Thanks again, Michael. We'll talk to you later. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Denver. Our next guest of the evening is from even farther away from me than Denver, Colorado. Julius Awafong joins us from Cameroon, Yaoundé, Cameroon. And here he is.
Hello, Chuck. Greetings and greetings to our listeners. Today, we're still dwelling on one of our most preoccupying topics, that is the crisis that's ongoing in Cameroon and how it affects other areas of life. You know, the Boko Haram insurgency in the north, what they call the Islamic sect, last week killed almost about 20 Cameroonian soldiers. They first killed 7, and I think 2 days ago they killed about 10 and or more, because sometimes the government won't give you the real statistics for strategic reasons. But the families will always cry, the ones, I mean, their lost ones. So last week, Friday, was a day of mourning in Cameroon to pay respect to the fallen soldiers. But what was the impact? Did it really mean to the people? You know, before the ongoing Anglophone separation crisis rocking the country, that is, this crisis going on where the English-speaking part of the country wants to separate from the French-speaking part. Before we arrived there, I must admit that Cameroonians all had the feeling of belonging to one country, or to Cameroon, where they thought they could all be loved. Because in 2015, just before the Anglophone crisis, everybody was on board to support the government fight the Boko Haram insurgency. But after the Anglophone crisis, we found out that some people do not really feel belonging to Cameroon anymore. They've made up their minds to the point where they think creating their own state will make them more fulfilled, will make them feel like they belong to a country than belonging to one wherein they are not even respected. So that's why when last Friday was being observed as the National Day of Mourning regarding the fallen heroes killed by the Boko Haram insurgency in the north of Cameroon, some people outrightly said, how does that concern us? You know, can you imagine that if in a country some people don't care about their military being killed by a supposed terrorist group, or let's if not supposed, they are classified as a, I mean, Boko Haram is being classified as a terrorist group by the United States, by European Union, by African Union, and the Cameroon government. So it is even by the Nigerian government. So it is an Islamic sect, a terrorist sect. So if people do not care about their soldiers who are being killed by this terrorist group, so many questions are coming to mind. Why would they be doing that? First of all, we have to understand that the African military is not the European or the American type of military. In fact, the military of most developing countries or third world countries are not the same as the military of the first world or developed countries. That's the first point. So this has an impact on the people. For example, with the ongoing Anglophone crisis, this same military that is being sponsored by taxpayers' money, this same military that was being supported by the Anglophones when the Boko Haram crisis just broke up in 2014, is the same military being used to massacre civilians. It is the same military being used to kill those who do not feel happy in a country and will want to have a better life by protesting. Now, when that happens, people immediately understand that the military we have is not a military that is there for the state. It is not a military that is there for the country. It is a military put in place to protect a regime, a political regime, to protect those ruling Cameroon. Now, once that is done, people no more respect the military. Once people understand, or the citizen understand that a military protects a corrupt leadership more than it should protect the people, people no more support the military. People no more respect the military. Because it is not a Republican military. It is not a military for the people anymore. It is a military for a group. Now, why a group? You know, like I usually explain in some of my presentations, Cameroon is a multi-ethnic state. It's a state made up of so many ethnic groups. When the Germans came, they forced most of our pre-colonial states, which were sometimes kingdoms and empires, to belong to what they created as Cameroon. So the creation of Cameroon was done by the Germans. And they did not create Cameroon. They did not force people to belong to this entity, to this geographical area, which they created because they loved the people. The Germans created Cameroon to exploit Cameroon. So that was the basis on which Cameroon was created. Then came the French and the British. So those who belong to Cameroon, as I usually explain to some people, did not consciously sit down to say, let's create a Cameroon. The pre-colonial territories, the different kingdoms, the kings and the fons and the leaders and the chiefs of the different pre-colonial kingdoms, which we can still call them pre-colonial states, that is, states before the arrival of the white man, states before the Cameroon we have, because Cameroon is considered as a modern state. These people, this kingdom, these pre-colonial kings did not sit down to create a Cameroon consciously. That is why it is difficult to manage Cameroon. That is why Cameroon is still managed by its former colonial masters. I mean, indirectly. Consequently, the military that was put in place was not a military that reflected the people. It was a military that reflected the colonial masters. So the foundation of the military of most African or post-colonial states, Cameroon, Gabon, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, and so on, are there to reflect not the people which they are supposed to protect, but to protect the those who created the state, the Europeans. That is not done directly. That is done indirectly because leadership that is being put in place is being fashioned, in the case of Cameroon, by France. So when...
Unfortunately, we ran out of time and weren't able to hear all of the Alphafong column. And I will try to make it available on the website so that you can hear all of it.
Find some comfort at Willow's World.
Thank you.
A variety of news, commentary,
Julius
and poetry
Alphafong
at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank and annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, folks, to the New American Dream Radio Show. And we have one more half-hour segment coming up for you. Now, some of you may know, and others may not, but you're about to learn. I'm also the founder and publisher of CWG Press. Now, CWG Press is an independent press, and I like to publish things that might not get published otherwise, or some things that I was lucky enough to find first. You never know. Now, lately, an awful lot of the things that I have published in recent years have been from my former co-host, Mike Palachek. But coming up next month, I have something brand new coming out from CWG Press. And the title of the book is The Last of the Long-Haired Hippies, and it's written by Deb Collins Smith. And I'm going to share with you the prologue to this book. I hope to get this out by July 4th. I'm not completely sure I'm going to make it, but it's definitely going to be out in the first week or two of July. And I've read the manuscript, and now I've been editing and preparing it for publication and reading it again in the process. And if anything, I like it better. So here we go. Here's a little bit of The Last of the Long-Haired Hippies. This is the prologue. October 19, 1992, Monday evening. Stomper never stays out this late, Mom. Billy Haroldson hated to whine, but couldn't seem to stop himself. What if he's hurt or lost? Stomper knows this town better than you do, young man. Go get washed up for supper. He'll come home sooner or later, but you need to eat. Lena Haroldson placed firm hands on Billy's shoulders and aimed him toward the bathroom. But we need to look for Stomper, Billy tried one last time, received a smart whack on the bottom for his efforts. Tears stung his eyes, more from anger and wounded ego than pain. I'm 10 years old, he thought, wiping at his eyes with grubby fists. Too old for spanking. We slammed the bathroom door and whipped the faucets on full blast. He heard his mother's footsteps retreat to the kitchen. She always made meatloaf on Monday nights. It wasn't Billy's favorite meal, but she made her own sauce for it, and it tasted pretty good. Loads better than the school cafeteria. Their meatloaf was only good for doorstops. That was a standing joke, anyway. Billy turned the water down a little bit and eased the door open a crack. Mom had disappeared into the kitchen. He could hear the clatter of dishes as she set the table in the dining room. If he was really, really quiet, maybe he could slip out the front door. He had to do it before his dad pulled up in the driveway, though. Rapped on the bathroom door, a frown puckering her brow. Billy, don't you think you've scrubbed enough? Water isn't free, you know. No answer. Lena's frown deepened. Billy! She opened the door, expecting to hear an outraged cry at her intrusion. The water still ran, steaming up the mirror. But Billy wasn't there. Running from his home down the side street a block away, Billy cut across the Compton Grade School playground. There were cornfields out past the school, and sometimes Stomper liked to chase squirrels and rabbits through the narrow paths of green stalk. Once Billy made it far enough from home to yell without getting caught, he started calling Stomper's name. That usually brought the little brown mutt running. Pure Heinz 57, his dad declared. A little bit of everything mixed into one medium-sized dog. But he'd lick Billy's nose and thump the floor enthusiastically with his back leg when Billy scratched behind his ear, and that earned him the name Stomper and a home where he was loved. Night fell quickly in the Midwest when fall turned the leaves golden and the crops dwindled to dry husks. The air carried a nip that signaled cold days to come. Billy wondered if they'd see snow by Halloween. Usually not this far south, but you never knew. Southern Illinois had fairly mild winters. The worst of the weather normally hit in January and February. He hoped this fall wouldn't break that record because he didn't want to miss his trick-or-treating. It was probably the last year he'd get to go out for it. Once you hit the double digits, adults tended to frown on it. Trick-or-treating was for the little kids, but his best friend Tyler had a little sister. Maybe he could buy himself a couple more years if he and Tyler volunteered to escort her on these rounds. Well, he'd have to bounce that idea off Tyler at school tomorrow. Billy found he walked farther than he expected. The old Miller place was up ahead. Faded red barn, barely visible above the tree line that separated the old homestead from Hank Carson's fields. Should have brought a flashlight, Billy grumbled to himself. Didn't expect Stomper to come this far, though. Darn dog! Something rolled over Billy. A feeling, a squeamish foreboding. He wouldn't have had the words to define it as such, but he felt the hairs on the back of his neck standing straight up. The sun had sunk below the horizon, but he could see light flickering through the trees. Shouldn't be anyone at the Miller place, he whispered to himself. The house had burned down 3 years ago. Mrs. Miller had died in the fire. Folks said Mr. Miller didn't clean the fireplace properly, and that's what started the blaze. Mrs. Miller went to bed early. Mr. Miller had been down at the local bar, and, well, she never woke up. Mr. Miller moved away, but the barn was still there. Some of the older boys drove out here to drink and smoke weed from the rumors Billy heard at school. He didn't have any firsthand knowledge about it, but if it was the older local guys out there, maybe they'd help him and Stomper. But something still didn't feel right to Billy. He crept quietly through the bushes and trees, grateful they still had a few leaves to hide his approach. Preacher said last Sunday, if you felt something wasn't quite right, just listen to that instinct. Could even save your life. Well, Billy wasn't sure he believed that part, but his insides felt jittery. Maybe he should listen to that inner warning. He'd have to ask Preacher next weekend just what it meant. A low voice carried eerily on a stray breeze. The night was still. Something so terrible that nature feared to move or breathe. That something emanated from the barn. Flickers of light drew his attention. Someone had made use of the clearing to start a small fire. Billy scurried from the tree line to an old water trough, still a good 20 feet from the fire. Peering around its splintered corner, Billy witnessed a figure in a long black robe walking slowly from the barn, a big bundle in its arms. A low chanting carried over the old cattle corral, but he couldn't understand the words. It doesn't feel right, Billy thought. Whatever it is, it's just not right. He thought about jumping up and yelling, "Surprise!" For surely it was older kids playing a Halloween prank a little bit early. Surely it was. But that feeling wouldn't leave Billy. This was serious, terrible, and very wrong. He began to shiver, wrapped his arms around his skinny body to keep from bumping against the trough. The night air caught in his chest, and for a few moments, Billy forgot how to breathe. With a few more mumbled words, the figure heaved the shrouded bundle into the fire. Sparks flew upward in an eerie spiral. The figure moved around the fire, drawing in the dirt with hands hidden by long folds of dark fabric. Drawing in the dirt with hands hidden, face hidden by a hood. No features were visible at all. Billy watched as the fire died down. The figure retreated to the barn again. Billy crept forward, and the stench hit him. Burning flesh. Suspicion grew in Billy's heart. No, it couldn't be. Nobody around here is mean enough to... No, it's got to be a squirrel or a rabbit. But the bundle was too big to be a small creature. When he was level with the barn door, he heard a voice whispering, and he froze. Shroud this town in darkness. Shroud this town in darkness. Shroud this town in darkness. And then silence. Minutes later, Billy heard a car door slam and an engine revved and peeled under the dirt between the cornfields. When the sounds of the engine died in the distance, he crept toward the fire and its ominous tinder. A rope trailed from the bundle. Billy grasped the rope and yanked. Some of the wood fell from the fire. Billy leaped back to avoid being burned. When he saw the firewood wasn't rolling further, he picked up the rope and pulled again. An old blanket had been loosely draped around something. Something with brown fur on its hind leg. No, whispered Billy, tears streaming down dirty cheeks. Well, that was an excerpt from The Last of the Long-Haired Hippies by Deborah Cullen Smith. It will be coming out from CWG Press sometime in July. With a little luck, it might be July 4th. Look for it. It'll be available on Amazon and at cwgpress.com. And now, our final guest of the evening. The final guest happens to be my co-host, my new co-host, Philip Ferrugio from Port Orange, Florida, with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. The eve of destruction that never ends. In 1965, songwriter P.F. Sloan wrote the lyrics for Eve of Destruction. The most famous recording was by Barry McGuire in the summer of that same year. Some of the lyrics obviously addressed the issue of the Cold War between the U.S., Russia, and China, or the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the thrust for integration in the South. Other of the song's lyrics seem to be timeless. For instance, don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can you feel the fears that I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over again, my friend, that you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth. It knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation. When human respect is disintegrating, the whole crazy world is just too frustrating. The pounding of the drums, the pride and the disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. Nah, you don't believe we're on the eve of the destruction. Okay, that was from the song. Since that song came out in the mid-60s, this empire of ours has gotten more and more bold. The Vietnam debacle forced the movers and shakers of this republic, I call them the economic and military predators, to take a pause to regroup. Boy, did they ever. By the time Bush Sr. took over a White House that he most likely ran for the 8 years under Reagan, the Cold War seemed to be over. The infamous Berlin Wall came down, and even the controlled mainstream media talked about a peace dividend. Imagine money that usually went down the rabbit hole of Pentagon spending could now be redirected for things like better infrastructure, better schools, and of course, maybe even a viable national health care for all. Sorry. The bag of dirty tricks was opened up, and voila, we had the new Hitler, Saddam Hussein, as villain number one. You see, he made the error of listening to Ambassador April Glasby in 1991, who assured him that the U.S. does not get involved in disputes between two other nations. One must also think that April Glasby got Hussein to buy a piece of that bridge in Brooklyn. Fast forward to 11 years later in 2002, and once again, Saddam Hussein, with his invisible WMDs, had us all on another Eve of Destruction watch list. Well, we know how the Bush-Cheney gang took care of that problem. History then instructs us that from that phony war in Iraq, our illegal invasions and occupations of both Afghanistan and Iraq, our carpet bombing of Libya, and now our intrusions into Syria, the tens of thousands of terrorists we helped create and nurture are here to stay. Thus, another Eve of Destruction takes our focus from what really ails our republic. Factor in the new phony threats from Iran and Venezuela, and you have great fodder for the national security state to chomp on. Oh, did I forget the new Cold War with the same players from bombshell this past? You know, the Ruskies and the Chinks. What better way to keep the suckers feeding on the pablum of money for security and not for a better life for all Americans? Yes, indeed, there is no con like the long con. Thank you.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Tonight at the Moonrock Lake Public Library, they'll be reading from the best-selling book by Moonrock Lake self-published author and dog catcher Solomon Sendak. It's entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town, and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt kindly sent to us by Moonrock Lake Public Librarian Doris Morris. It's cold today. That's good, right? Always good when it's cold, because that means there's no global warming yet, right? Well, anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moonrock Lake, had a warming scare not too long ago. Stories all about the folks in Jennifer Junction. Tommy and Robert S. Thompson and the waitress, and Carl with his college in his basement. And Gutner and Jesse and the old people, Grain Elevator Casino. And the radio station wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then, sort of like the Lindbergh baby, well, sort of not, but the Sox baby's been stolen. Maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive-up. Maybe by the Foos who own Foos Foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foos because they think they took sweat socks. Gutner and Ron Waters in the light blue Robin's Egg Blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took sweat socks. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story, huh? Kind of steamy. Well, not like daytime TV, like sweaty, hot and sweaty, like moisture under your arms and other places. Sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal global warming in a small town. What happened up to now? Well, a lot, I'd say. Fine. In Jennifer Junction, the local radio show has the whole town wearing sweatpants to fight global warming. And sweat socks, the local baby of local gym teachers, Jim and Bobby Socks, has been stolen. Some think it was the Foos who owned Foos Foods took sweat socks to get back at Americans for taking so many Korean babies. Some say it was Laverna at the drive-up window of the bank. Some say it was the pizza delivery guy because he refuses to wear the sweatpants. OMG, what will be next? Hi, it's me, Tommy. There goes Don. Oh, my God, he's got Laverna in the backseat. He smiles, waves with her cupped hands. This is a big day for her. That's so nice. There's CCC. It's uphill, like Mount Olympus, Carl says. Almost straight up. Well, probably not straight up, but feels like it. There's Carl. He's walking around his yard with his head down, arms behind his back, his pipe in his teeth. He's heard Hey, Carl, hello, young man. What's to be done? I pull right up to him in front of him to maybe make him stop pacing. No way I can follow him all over his lawn on my bike with all the nightcrawler hills. He's actually pinned between me and the peonies. White, pink, too. I say I don't know. He just wants to talk. I know that. His questions are not Socratic, rhetorical. He's not interested in what I have to say. That's okay with me. I didn't come here to really say anything. Carl's wearing a black professor's graduation gown. He has on an Afghan Packhall hat. I know because he told me. To me, he looks like maybe Sherlock Holmes in his graduation gown and pipe. Stalking his yard, unconsciously stepping over and around all the dandelions. Now that there's a local murder to be solved. Well, not really a murder yet, but it could be. That would be serious. There'd be lots of pacing required. People would have lots to say. Might be outboard barbecues to talk it over. Maybe a circus, big church festivals, parades, candy. It's true that Don's on the case and already has a suspect in the back of his car, but I don't think it hurts to have Carl out here in his hat, black graduation gown, brown penny loafers, and pipe. Anyway, well, just in case. Cherry. The pipe of tobacco, it's cherry. Yeah, he takes it out, taps or, well, beats. Carl likes us to use specific language. Beats it against his palm, then the side of his shoe. I think he probably saw his granddad do that. There's really no reason. It'll just fall out if you turn it over. The financier is in official custody, Carl says. Not looking at me, but rather over the lawn in the direction of the fire hydrant. As if it would speak, if only someone would listen. I'm a prop, like the pipe and the hat and gown. Necessary for the play. I don't mind. It is what it is. You know, Jesse pulls up in the Can 88 Honda Accord ladder truck. He's trying to get a Dalmatian. He still lives at home. His mother says they're a nasty breed, but Jesse says he's either moving or just keeping the dog in the car. I'm not sure what that does to the monthly training sessions. A lot to consider when you enter a public service field. That's what Carl said, his public administration course. Jesse parks in the drive, rolls down the window, cocks his head. He's chewing gum. I guess he's trying to quit smoking or something. As he tilts his head to look up at Carl, somehow keep the sun out of his eyes, his seed corn cap hits the door frame. Now sits at kind of an angle on his head, which turns out is just right for the sun. I'm thinking, what then, I presume? And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that pretty much wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I'd like to thank my former co-host, Mike Palachek, for a great deal of the material that I read on the show. I'd like to thank Deborah Cullen-Smith for an excerpt from her upcoming book by CWG Press, The Last of the Long-Haired Hippies. I'd like to thank my new co-host, Philip Ruggio, and our guests, Glenn Ford, Frank Cordero, Michael Annis, and Julius Alafong. I thank you, all of you, out there in listener land. Thank you for joining me tonight on the New American Dream Radio Show. Streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it's a listener-supported network, so show them some support. Thank you. Talk to you next time.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present 48 broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the...